bring greetings in Jesus' name this afternoon. Extracurricular study. I'm going to be looking at this mostly from the perspective of students who have extra time. And I'm going to be breaking it into three parts: the need, the method, and the resources. The need, the method, and the resources. First of all, the need. It's not really a bad problem, is it? If a student has extra time, that's actually kind of a good thing, isn't it? He must be getting his work done and getting good grades, and he has a little extra time to use. Now, of course, we hope he's not being careless, but if he's doing a good job with his work, well, that's kind of a good problem. Well, the need. One thing that causes the need probably is unbalanced grades. We have a grade, we have grade 4 here, and they're just not all the same. We have considerable variation in skill level within the grade. Some need more to do and some need less to do. As teachers, we can relate to that. One teacher said one time that she wishes she could put them all into a bag and shake them up. And then it would even them out, you know, and they'd all be the same. Simple solution. Maybe not so simple. The other thing that brings about the need is, as already mentioned, extra time on our hands. Student gets his work done. Now, just a few tips. Once again, I'm a teacher. I'll probably talk as though I'm talking to teachers sometimes, and hopefully board members can take some thoughts home as well. One way we can help the slow learner is by assigning him evens and odds. By that I just mean that we have a math lesson now and it's lesson 69. So he knows without being told that he'll do the odd numbers because it's an odd lesson. So he just knows he does all the odd numbers in that lesson. If he gets them done, then generally he would start over at the evens. Can make exception for that. But maybe he's just a little bit slower than the rest. And if he'd do half lessons, he'd have 20 minutes extra every class. And if it's lesson 84, then he knows he does even numbers. So it's just an understanding between teacher and student that he does half lessons. So we can help the slow learner get the concept and keep up with the rest. I have many times used this successfully. Well, we certainly don't want boredom in our classrooms. We don't want boredom in the house of learning. Laziness is the devil's workshop, and it lends itself to mischief. So we want to keep people busy. Number two, the method. What's the method? Well, one is to assign extracurricular work, make assignments. Assigning certain students to certain projects is helpful, but I would hasten to say that better is to inspire. If the teacher can inspire, sometimes that takes its own course, and the student feels that inspiration. Get them enthused about doing some extra research on a particular subject. And the teacher can be a good example of subject research. If the teacher says, I learned, or I saw something yesterday I'd never seen before, or I watched, those inspire students to do the same. They wish they could learn and watch and hear and read. And remember that dynamic teaching motivates external research. Dynamic teaching, it does more than that, but it motivates external research. If the teacher is enthused about learning, it rubs off onto the students. One more point on the method, and that is to avoid. Something you want to avoid in extracurricular, at least the normal extracurricular, would be making the extracurricular things too unique or exciting. Like saying, those who have extra time in math class may build mousetrap cars. No, better not. Better not. This can develop feelings of inequality. What about the poor boy that never will have extra time in math class and he knows it? What's he supposed to do? Can create envy or make people think the teacher has a pet and so on. Teachers, it's our challenge to treat each student as equally as possible. Be fair with them. One time, I'll tell you a little story. I had a student that found learning very difficult, and he almost never had a library book. He just didn't have time. He was always busy. There was always work he could do. And I remember one morning, it was about 10:20, I think, math class. It was heading along toward recess, but it wasn't recess time yet. And he had raised his hand and asked me a question. And I hope I wasn't lazy. I don't think I was. But I just looked at him and I said, "Why don't you just put your math book away and go get a library book?" But what I never will forget was the student that sat beside him. Excellent student. She was reading a library book as she had how many times before, but she heard that. She looked at me, and she looked at him, and then she grinned. She was happy. I think he was too. What are the resources that teachers can use? Well, one resource is the library. And I won't make a lot of apology for that. Normally, as long as my students are content to read, I just let them do that. We work so hard. Grade one and grade one teachers, that's their work. And they do it well to teach a child to read. I've often said if you want to do something that's world-changing and get no credit for it, then teach a child to read. Have you ever thanked your grade one teacher? Do it. Just watch her face. Imagine how narrow your world would be. Well, then why not let him read? That's what we wanted. Let him read. Can you read without learning? The bed and the mattress. I journeyed unto a distant city, and I made a speech, and I tarried there until the next day. And one of the principal citizens invited me unto his home, and I went with him, and he entreated me well. Now when he had shown me unto my room, I beheld that all the furniture was of solid mahogany, and the bedstead was a work of art. But when I laid my weary form upon the bed, I sought to sleep, and I could not. For the mattress also was of solid mahogany, or something quite as uncomfortable, and with knots in the mahogany. And the spring sagged so that it deposited me in a heap in the middle of the bed, and I required a derrick wherewith to get out of it. Now the good God who made the trees made them of many kinds, and the wood of those trees hath each of them its own variety of beauty. And I love the color of mahogany, even when I suspect that it is birch with a stain upon it. But when I go unto my bed, I soon forget the color of the wood, and I desire a good mattress and a comfortable spring. And I considered mine hospitable hosts that they had about $50 wherewith to buy a bedstead and spring and a bed for their guest room, and they had spent 40 of it for the bedstead and divided the 10 which they had left between a sagging spring and a solid mahogany mattress with lumps in it. Now I considered that there are other people who do likewise, for I went unto the house of God, and there rose a preacher, and he preached. But he had put $40 of his preparation into the framework of his sermon, and had only $10.05 left wherein to preach the gospel. And I called upon a man who was not a preacher, and I found that he was putting $40 of his energy into getting a living and less than $10 into the actual business of living. And I thought about the solid mahogany bed and mattress, and I said, "The people who read these parables are highbrow, and they want no parables made out of such homely and commonplace things. But I opened the book of the prophet Isaiah, and I found there the words that he said, 'The bed is shorter than that a man can stretch himself upon it, and the covering narrower than that he can wrap himself in it.' And I knew that Isaiah was a tall man, even as I. And that when the bedclothes pulled out of the foot, he could make a parable out of it for the highbrow people of Jerusalem. And I thought I would take a chance at it. For there are many people in life who put too much into the mahogany bedstead and not enough into the mattress and the spring." Did you learn something? It's hard to read and not learn, at least if it's good writing. We say that readers are leaders, then let them read. Now, what if my students don't like to read? Well, my first question would be, why? Why don't students like to read? Now, I know that for some students, reading is like doing the chores. It's just simply hard work, too difficult to be enjoyed. But that should not be the norm. Sometimes a child that doesn't enjoy reading just needs to be told to read. Sometimes that's effective, and he will develop an interest. But it's also good to try to think if there is another reason. I had a child one time, a student, that was an underperformer. Just in a lot of subjects, school was hard, it seemed, and he didn't read much, and his mother told me at home he didn't read much. But he could draw, and I noticed that. I was delighted with his art skills, and I told him as much. I don't remember what I said at all, but I just tried to let him know that I liked what he was doing in art class, and that he had skill in that field. And you know, that changed his life. He started to read at school and at home. It just changed his whole perspective. I never forgot that lesson. And when I did that, I never dreamed. It wasn't that I had this all planned and had some special pill in my back pocket that I knew would work. It wasn't that way at all. And isn't that the way it is sometimes? We don't always know what's going to help. But sometimes just finding that one place in a child's life where they excel and noticing that can really make a difference. Another point on reading, and that is start a library fund. What did I say? Start a library fund. That's right, start a library fund. Our school board did that quite a few years ago. All they did was they just said, we're going to say that $20 a month goes toward the library. That's for all three classrooms in the school. We thought it was a good thing, but $20 a month isn't much. But you know, if you forget about, and by the way, maybe you should put it into a milk can, I'm not sure, because the board always kind of begrudges the day when they get over it. But when we talk about how much money is in the library fund and we'd like to use it, and there's none there, because it's just on paper. But it's still a fact that it's there for us, and we do forget about it for a while, and then we remember it, and we go to the books. It's amazing how it's added up, and we have hundreds of dollars there. We've even bought new sets of encyclopedias with that library fund, but so we can make an order form to the various publishers for books for all three classrooms. It's just one of those little things that I know it costs money, but if you plan for it, then it happens. And so just keep track of it in a book, and it has kept our library fresh. Well, a little bit more practical things our students can do in their extra time. They could write reports. Now, remember the inspiration part that I mentioned before, but the list of things they could write could be pages long. And sometimes just assign a report. Just say, Jeffrey, I want you to write on the country of Japan. Or prepare to tell us about Germany. So there are countries, there's the scope of history, there's the scope of science. You can take each one of those and break them way down. We can do research projects, questions related to subjects. This year we're studying geography, last year we studied history. So we're studying geography right now. And so what is the difference between a red pine and a white pine? We'll find out. And some of your students will enjoy that challenge. Find out what the difference is. Where does one need to go to tour the Kenora? That's a river boat that used to ply the waters of the Rainy River, which flows just a few miles south of us there, the border between us and the U.S. And these river boats, there's one that's been preserved. And we were talking about the other day, and I said, I'm sure that you can tour that thing. And then one of the students said, you know, sister, whoever in the church, they've been there. Well, I said, go find out. She'd be glad to tell you more about it. I want to know where it is. So she did. She came back with a little bit more information. So we can do research. We can outline, we can teach our students to, hopefully they've learned to outline, but I have a grade 8 boy doing this right now, all on his own initiative. He got excited about space and space travel and all of that. And he's making this big, long outline. Good practice for him. It could be an encyclopedia article. It could be a small book. If they have to outline, they'll see things about writing they've never seen before. That's good for them. They'll appreciate outlines more. If the author of that book didn't have an outline, good chance is not very many people have looked at it. We can teach them to summarize. Take these 10 pages in this book, in this history book, it doesn't have to be a textbook even, and summarize it. Or take this article in The Informer and summarize it. Writing. Now, I've been talking about writing, but my focus on this point is more concentrated on things such as poems or stories. Writing. And remember that there's no spare time in composition class. If you were teachers, I'd ask you how many of you have that little rule, but no spare time in composition class. It's impossible to have spare time in composition class. Why? Why? Story is never done. There's too much to write. That's correct. There's too much to write. Well, I guess I'm not talking to teachers, but we need to remember that the work of writing is never done. Every generation must write its faith. Daniel Kaufman and George R. Brunk didn't write it all, but even if they did, if they had, every generation must write its faith. That's right. Now you might say, but grade 8, grade 6? We must diligently prepare this generation to write its faith. And I'm not saying that our eighth graders will be writing heavy doctrinal treatises, but we are preparing them for that by teaching them to write skillfully on lesser subjects. And so write. Write a poem. Write a story. Drawing. I mentioned artwork before. There's usually a dearth of good artwork, it seems, for our publishers. And some students just enjoy drawing. Now again, we need to guide them. I'm not talking about these big semis with all the radio aerials and stripes and all the rest. Our publishers don't need them. They don't need guns either, usually. But they do need a lot of good pictures. And by the way, there's no spare time in art class either. Those are two subjects that there's no spare time. If you get done, and you know, I'm thinking teachers again, but it takes away so much pressure from a teacher if the students don't race through an art project so they can do something else. You're just going to be given another something to draw or color or whatever. Some students enjoy drawing. Let them go. Inspire them. Help them find outlets for their work. Teachers, I think that boards, we can even help our teachers with that. But I've helped a few of my students to get connected with Rod and staff so that they had an outlet for their work. You know, that does something to inspire a person if you know it might do some good someday. Now I know the carpenter that's going to build big houses someday probably won't start with a big house. He'll start with the doghouse. But it's still nice sometimes. The neighbor comes around and likes the doghouse. Well, then the boy could build one for him too. And there's a sense of reward in that. And our students feel that sense of reward. As they get older, if we can help them realize that, you know, this might actually be productive in the work of the church. Well, extra subject material. I just brought a little specimen of different. I teach very little CLE, but we have some of these around from before. Extra work. They can learn something. It's a little different than they're doing. Sometimes it's good to keep old curricula around for things like this. It might be outdated or simply not used anymore, but it could be very valuable. I have a student right now that she hasn't all year long, but sometimes when she has spare time, she'll get a book, pre-algebra. She's in grade 8 and she's looking forward to algebra next year. And so this is a book that we used to use and don't anymore. It's a Becca. It's up on the shelf upstairs. And it's called pre-algebra, and so she's enjoying that book. It's a challenge to her. You know, it's always really exciting to learn what you don't have to. make sure that you keep the answer key as well, so that you, otherwise you make yourself work. And if you don't have any old books like this lying around, well, chances are the neighboring school where the teachers have mummified into pieces of furniture could have some for you. They probably share some with you. Now, maybe you're saying, but how can a busy teacher keep up with even more? Remember this, that usually it's the fast students that need some extra work. They shouldn't need much coaching at all. They can do their work. They can do their own checking. All you have to do is perform occasional tow truck service. It's exciting to watch them learn. Well, remember as well that older students can profitably help the program. I think we should remember that. And boards, we can take that home. Does your junior teacher barely have enough time for flashcards? And here's grade 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 girls that wonder what to do. Not all of them, I know, they're busy. But you know what I'm saying? Why couldn't they help flash some flashcards? Why couldn't they do checking for that teacher? Lighten her load. They can even check tests in your own classroom or other students' work if they're trained. I wouldn't recommend this for first or second year teachers, but with practice and training, students can be taught how to check. They can do some photocopying that needs to be done. Keep that map supply up to date over there so that when we already do geography maps, it's there for us, et cetera, et cetera. They could help with the program profitably. Well, our goal is to fill these young minds with noble things. I quote, "Minds are like parachutes, they only function when open," unquote. And teachers, that is one of our challenges, to open the mind. And then those minds must be filled with good. Again, I quote, "Many men boast of an open mind when it is really only a blank space," unquote. I'm challenged. Brother Albert mentioned Enoch. You know, I think he had an open mind. But it wasn't a blank space, was it? It was filled with God. What a challenge for us today. Lord bless you.